clearly, yes, this is an attempt to step up the militarization of these islands.
China appears to further militarize South China Sea. It's Thursday, February 23rd. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Log on right now if you're online to our Facebook page at VOA Asia. Also ahead, new developments in North Korea murder mystery. Coal and steel challenge China's environment. Vietnamese fishermen try to catch compensation. Cool auto tech from Japan. Take a ride with us right now on VOA Asia. The top Philippines diplomat has expressed skepticism that the maritime dispute with China in the South China Sea will be resolved during our lifetime. Foreign Secretary Perfecto Yase said the option is not war, but rather setting aside territorial claims to pursue other aspects of relations with Beijing to maximize mutual benefits. On Tuesday, he also said Southeast Asian nations see China's militarization of the region very unsettling. Two U.S. officials told the Reuters news agency Beijing is nearly finished building almost two dozen structures on Subi, Mischief, and Fiery Cross Reefs in the Spratly Island chain that appear to be designed to house long-range surface-to-air missiles, where China had earlier constructed airstrips. Brad Glosserman, executive director of the Hawaii-based security think tank Pacific Forum, tells VOA's Victor Beatty this can be viewed as China's continued military escalation.
Clearly, they are intending to build facilities that allow them to permanently store or service or deploy equipment of a military nature to these islands. And China has never questioned whether or not that seemed to be the case. So I would say clearly, yes, this is an attempt to step up the militarization of these islands.
This comes, of course, at the beginning of a new U.S. administration. Do you see this as a test of President Trump?
Not deliberately. Obviously, the plans to proceed with this were set in motion some time ago. You don't build them overnight, certainly not if they're permanent structures, as they seem to be, and it's probably taken some time to actually acquire that data. So it constitutes a test for this president, but it was just as it constitutes a test for any president. In other words, this was not done specifically to challenge Mr. Trump. This was a determination that the Chinese had made about what they wanted to do and that, therefore, they were going to proceed. And now it becomes a challenge, but it was not designed as such.
Brad Glosserman said China will continue down this path until there's a price to pay. He said so far there's no downside to its policy. And Robert Manning, a senior fellow at the Atlantic Council, said he sees no slowdown in China's military buildup.
This is part of their effort to eventually control that first island chain near those in the South China Sea and assert their claims, even though they have been completely repudiated by the International Court of Appeal at The Hague based on the Law of the Sea Treaty, of which they are a member.
Is there anything the U.S. can do?
China is a nuclear weapons state. I think they've already are way ahead of us. They've changed their relationship with the Philippines, showering them with all sorts of economic gifts, and luckily for them with a leader that is antagonistic towards the United States. They've bought off Malaysia with a number of military supplies, including four lateral ships. They have a Thai military regime, of which there's some tension with the U.S. all over human rights, and they've brought them into their wider influence. And they just signed 15 agreements with Vietnam that seems to be moving towards coming to terms with China. They're now engaged with ASEAN, and I suspect we'll have finished a code of conduct, which will make ASEAN very happy. And at that point, I think that they've fully shifted into diplomatic mode, and I think the U.S. probably can and should continue freedom of navigation operations to emphasize that this is a core interest of the United States and has been for 200 years. But I don't think it will make much difference. I think the Chinese, at least in the near term, seem to have the upper hand.
Robert Manning said U.S.-China relations are now at a tipping point, and he says President Donald Trump will have to determine whether relations can remain more cooperative than competitive. These are among the top Asia stories trending on VOAnews.com. Amnesty International says rights slipping in Southeast Asia. Former Hong Kong leader sentenced on corruption charges. Indian Prime Minister urges far-sighted, balanced U.S. view on work visas. Khmer Rouge cadre's war crime charges dismissed in Cambodia. NGOs say Pakistan government restrictions hamper campaigns to curb militancy. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia and on our voanews.com website. As VOA Asia continues, the Malaysian police Wednesday said they want to question three new North Korean suspects, including a North Korean diplomat, in connection with the apparent assassination last week of Kim Jong-nam, the older half-brother of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. This is one of three developments in the case, as we hear from VOA Seoul correspondent Brian Patton.
In a very vague connection with this case is a diplomat with the North Korean embassy in Kuala Lumpur. The police have asked to speak to him. They've also asked to speak to two other North Koreans, and they're asking for the North Korean embassy's help to bring them to the police so they can cooperate and be questioned. The second one that they asked for is a representative from the North Korean airline, Air Korea.
Brian, I understand one of the developments involves the two women who apparently carried out this attack and are being held right now for questioning.
The Malaysian police refuted a claim made by one of the suspects, at least, who is already in jail. Two women have been arrested, one a Vietnamese woman and one a Indonesian woman. These two women were allegedly the assailants of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un's estranged half-brother, Kim Jong-nam, who was killed at the Kuala Lumpur airport last week. And the manner of his murder was these two alleged assailants, these women, came up to him and sprayed him with a liquid and pulled the cloth over his face so that he would have to breathe it in. And this unidentified liquid to date was some sort of toxic poison that rapidly killed him on his way to seeking medical assistance afterwards. The two women who were arrested, one of the women, at least one of them, the one from Indonesia, claimed that she was doing this as a prank for a comedy TV show. She was hired as an actress to perform these pranks and that she's done them in the past. Well, the police have refuted that claim, saying if you watch carefully the video, these women, as soon as they applied the toxic liquid to the victim, they ran to the bathroom to wash their hands. The police said that these two women, along with their team of handlers, practiced this assault at least on two occasions in the past, and that they were instructed this time that they were handling a very toxic chemical and that they had to wash their hands afterwards. So they refuted that claim.
Now, there's also an unusual development concerning the body itself. Is that correct?
Recently this week, the police said someone tried to break into the morgue where the body was being held and that they have increased security around that to prevent that from happening again. They did not give any details about who might have been involved in the alleged break-in or what their motivation was, but left it all to our imaginations. With all these details combined, particularly that there are now more North Koreans being sought in this probe, that one of the interested parties that the police want to question works for the embassy itself, that there are, in addition to that, there are four North Koreans who the police want to talk to who have allegedly left Malaysia and are now in North Korea, and the Malaysian police have requested that they be returned to Kuala Lumpur for questioning. So more and more, it is looking like the North Koreans are either trying to obstruct the investigation or were somehow directly involved in the planning and execution of the murder. The North Korean government has so far refused to cooperate in any way, even to provide DNA samples or dental records to confirm that Kim Jong-nam was indeed the victim here.
VOA Seoul correspondent Brian Patton. Happening now in Asia, Hong Kong's former chief executive Donald Tsang, the highest-ranking ex-official to be charged in the city's history, has received a prison term of 20 months for misconduct in public office. Analysts say his conviction will have little impact on the city's upcoming chief executive election in March. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us today on VOA Asia. A recent recovery in steel and coal production in China has posed a challenge to the country's war on pollution aimed at reversing the damage done to its skies, soil, and water. As both industries represent two of the largest polluting sectors in China, some analysts are expressing concerns over their negative impact on the country's air quality, although many say in the long run China will achieve its 2020 environmental targets for energy consumption and reduction of carbon and pollutant emissions. It was presented in its latest five-year plan. A recent report released by Greenpeace East Asia says China's steel industry actually saw a net increase of 36.5 million tons in operating capacity last year, that despite October claims that China had already met its 2016 reduction target. Greenpeace global coal campaigner Lori Miliverta says increasing steel capacity makes neither economic nor environmental sense, as global markets are still awash with steel and northern Chinese provinces suffer from worsening smog.
There was definitely a setback in the fight against air pollution in the sense that the improvement in the most polluted areas around Beijing and so on stalled and even reversed during the past 12 months.
China is already the world's largest carbon dioxide emitter, accounting for more than one quarter of the global carbon dioxide emissions. Greenpeace says coal-fired power plants would also worsen the country's air quality, as they are the biggest contributors to sulfur dioxide and particle emissions worldwide. But positive steps have been taken, according to Miliverta.
One thing that we've been very concerned about is that there was still very aggressive expansion in coal-fired generating capacity in 2015-2016. But luckily, in the past few months, the government has taken very strong steps to suspend new projects and even stop projects that are already under construction.
In early January, China ordered the suspension of 103 coal power projects, nearly half of those 210 new plants approved since 2015. The National Energy Administration on Friday said the government aims to close down 500 coal mines in 2017. That would be equal to 20% of last year's 250 million ton goal. The NEA expected coal output will rise 5.8% this year, which will mark an end to a three-year streak in declining output. To meet its 2020 environmental targets, China has announced $373 billion in total investment for new installed capacity of renewable energy, which includes hydropower, wind, and solar.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Lawyers for impeached South Korean President Park Geun-hye have called for the removal of the Constitutional Court's lead justice, saying the court favors the National Assembly. The justices rejected the request, but did agree to request from Park's team to move closing arguments to February 27th. All the big stories come your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia continues. Last year, a steel plant operated in Vietnam by Formosa Plastics Group, one of Taiwan's largest industrial conglomerates, acknowledged it had discharged a high volume of toxic waste into the ocean. The discharge resulted in a large number of fish being killed along a 200-kilometer stretch of Vietnam's central coastline. Hanoi in July slapped a huge government fine against Formosa Plastics, but now a small group of local fishermen who spoke with VOA last week say they want to file a complaint directly against the company. VOA Asia's Steve Miller learns more from VOA Vietnamese reporter Thuc Pham.
The disaster that Formosa caused began in April last year, 2016. And then after some investigation by the government, the Formosa company admitted that they did cause the disaster. And in late June, they agreed to pay $500 million to the government, not directly to fishermen and other people affected by the disaster. And the investigation of the government showed that only four provinces, Ha Tinh, were affected by the disaster. And the people in Nghệ An province, just about 100 kilometers north of Ha Tinh province, where Formosa is. And the government didn't say that the people in Song Ngoc are affected, but people in Song Ngoc believe they are affected. Last year, they already tried once by submitting a complaint, but their complaint were rejected by a local court. So this time, they gather new evidence and they work together collectively to come up with a new complaint, and they try to go to the court this time.
Now, were they successful in going to the court with this latest complaint?
No. They announced about their efforts. They announced about their intention a few weeks before they actually started to go. But on the day that they really went out to Ha Tinh province, they were stopped by the local authorities. First, the authorities asked all public transportation services to refuse to carry the fishermen.
Why did the government get involved?
Because the government thought that only four provinces are affected. Secondly, the government already received $500 million from Formosa, and it looks like there was a deal between Formosa and the government that once the government received that money, the government cannot do anything else with Formosa. So the government does not want this thing to spread to become a larger problem involving other provinces.
Now, is this the first legal trouble for Formosa Plastics in Vietnam?
I don't think so. There were other violations by Formosa, but they were, you know, smaller in scale. Formosa has not officially begun operation, and it already caused environmental problem. So in the contract that say it can operate for 70 years, what may happen in those 70 years? So that's why, you know, people are very concerned.
So what are these fishermen going to do since they weren't able to file their case?
They are now working on a different tactics. They will not go together with 500-600 people. From my interviews with key people in this area, they say that they will now come up with a new complaint and they will send three or four people as their representatives to file the complaint.
Thuc Pham is with our VOA Vietnamese service. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much.
Developing at this hour in Asia, China reportedly has completed nearly two dozen buildings with retractable roofs on islands it created in the South China Sea. The retractable roofs could hide long-range surface-to-air missile systems. The development is seen as a test to the new Trump administration. VOA Asia keeps you informed all day on Facebook at VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, wow, it's hard to believe. 20 years ago, Japanese car maker Toyota unveiled the first version of its hybrid gas-electric car called Prius. Well, now by the beginning of 2017 and counting all subsequent models, Prius became the best-selling hybrid car in the world with close to 4 million sold. And its latest model with a battery-charging solar roof was just unveiled in Japan. VOA's George Pudich reports.
As is customary for Toyota, the new model was first presented to the Japanese market.
This is the key and core of the Eco car, and this is the car which should become the mainstream of the Eco car from now on. Now, what comes after the hybrid car? That will be plug-in hybrid. This is Toyota's answer.
The first generation of Toyota's hybrid Prius Prime that could be recharged from a wall socket appeared in 2012. Its all-electric range was only about 26 kilometers, and it did not sell very well on the American market. Toyota hopes the new Prius PHV, or plug-in hybrid vehicle, will attract more buyers with improved electric range of up to 68 kilometers and total range, using its gas engine as well, of over 1,000 kilometers. At home, its battery can be charged in less than 3 hours, while charging at the station fills it 80% in just 20 minutes. Another improvement is the roof covered with solar cells.
Finally, we converted solar energy to driving energy. The option of solar energy charging will become a first for the mass production car.
Toyota says the solar charge provides power for a range of up to 6 kilometers daily. Other than that, the car is loaded with safety features such as rear cross traffic and blind spot alert. Sales in other countries will start in March. George Putich, VOA News, Washington.
And while we pause to recharge for our next VOA Asia program tomorrow, we roll on Facebook 24/7. Stop by and visit us at VOA Asia. Our director for today's program, Tracy Carter, engineer Carl Starling, managing editor Diane Gao. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions. This is one of a series on the U.S. Constitution and the structure of the U.S. government.
In a bid to protect the rights of citizens, the founders of the United States of America included in the Constitution, or the legal framework of the new government, 10 amendments, 3 to protect individual rights and 7 to ensure justice. They are collectively named the Bill of Rights. The Fourth Amendment deals with issues of privacy. It states that the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. Search and seizure of private property by authorities was a major grievance with the framers of the Constitution. This is borne out in the writings of James Otis, Jr., a colonial lawyer in Massachusetts, who argued in court against writs of assistance, used instead of warrants by British officials to enter private homes and businesses to search for evidence of smuggling. Writs never expired and were transferable from one official to another. Arguing before a British court that writs should not be legal, Otis said that with a writ, custom house officers may enter our houses when they please. We are commanded to permit their entry. Their menial servants may enter, may break locks, bars, and everything in their way, and whether they break through malice or revenge, no man, no court can inquire. Bare suspicion without oath is sufficient. Otis lost that case. But his arguments, as well as the memory of the violations of privacy and unreasonable searches suffered by the colonists under the British government, influenced the framers of the Constitution. And thus, the First Amendment to the Constitution to deal with justice took aim at unreasonable search and seizure. As a result, any search, seizure, or arrest requires a judicially sanctioned warrant, which must be supported by probable cause. The warrant is limited in scope by specific information supplied to the issuing court. Evidence obtained without a warrant, and thus illegally, cannot be introduced into a criminal trial. In the words of mid-20th century Supreme Court Justice Potter Stewart, at the very core of the Fourth Amendment stands the right of a man to retreat into his own home and there be free from unreasonable governmental intrusion.
That was an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.